Alison coming in?
Oh, I need
Alison. Walk out front.
Do you want a motion? Do you need a motion for that?
No, I don't think we do.
Oh, the president.
No, no.
I'm here. A motion for the
Not yet, not yet. Welcome to the President's Business Group. Yes, welcome back. Okay, table of contents as is, except that planning board bring the floor. Nothing now, changes?
Changes.
Acknowledgement of country, we acknowledge and pay our respects to the Tasmanian Aboriginal community as the traditional and original owners and continuing custodians of this land on which we gather today, and acknowledge elders past, present and emerging. Any declarations of pecuniary interest from anybody? Councillor Gillingham?
Gov 7, Gov 8, Corp 2, the music on verandas and Plan 1.
Confirmation of minutes from the September 21st, subject to the amendment that Councillor Davis voted for a particular motion and not against. So we vote Councillor Adams, seconded, Councillor Cross, all those in favour, against, carry. Confirmation of minutes of committees, Councillor Lynch, and seconded, Councillor Adams. All those in favour?
Aye.
Yes, carry. Recommendation from the subcommittees. The Ross Local District Committee have a recommendation about Honeysuckle Road. And the recommendation, the councillors, oh, we just note the information as a recommendation. Councillor Lambert, Councillor Ross. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against, carry. Longford Local District Committee, they've got several, so I don't know if you want to do them all at once. The officer's recommendation is that the officers investigate and provide advice to the Longford Local District Committee in relation to those motions. Councillor Adams, Councillor
Gillian. I'll leave.
Yes, Councillor Gillian, you're seconding?
I'll second it.
Councillor Goss, please.
Some discussion?
Yep.
We're doing all the one thing. I just want to talk about Kate Lee there. I did mention in the Gallon Workshop, but at the moment, when we drive around the townships and our community, it's really within full bloom. And I just wondered that Longford committee put that forward about doing a spraying program or doing something about it. But I just wondered whether the our officers could possibly go around and look for some really high infestigated areas. I don't mean about doing the whole town, for doing those areas which are highly infestated and see if they can do something with those ones. There are some big areas down Wellington Street, and there are some areas, big areas also on the southern end of Longford. And I'm not sure, Cressy used to have a lot, but doesn't seem to fall off much here at the minute, so I'm not sure what's happened there, but which is good. But there are areas which are really heavily infestated, and we need to make a note of those so that in the time of the year when we spray them, which is in May, April, May next year, that we actually know where they're going to spray them, because it's very hard to see where they are if you don't make those records now. That's all. I'm not sure if we need to, don't need to move any of the officers to make a note of that, and if there's any other councillors who want to comment on that, suggested.
Councillor Lambert.
I'd like to thank the Longford District Committee for bringing this up, because it's a municipality-wide issue, statewide issue, and it's a disgrace that there is cateweed in areas that are not our responsibility, that belong to another government agency, and they should be doing their due diligence a little bit better than they are. But so I'd like to thank them for bringing this up, but in regard to local government, we need to be getting on to it. I know it's probably too late to spray now, is that correct?
So
we keep going with it. So there is a spraying program that we are adhering to. I thought I saw a sprayer the other day in Perth, which was cool. But I think we need to keep going with it, because it's really important to keep it under control. And for those people that are doing the right thing, we need to be those people as well. Councillor Gillingham.
Just wondering what the officers comments will be on the signage to access the levy bank and also the draft planning scheme for amendment around the southern Longford, which is around the race track. What will be their thoughts on that, if it's left to officers?
I think the comments with regards to levy, there's only one portion that we're looking at the moment with regards to the funding we received to look at people, you know, access to levy. So we'd have to go back once council's made a determination on whether they'll proceed with that or not, because at the moment I think council's considering about directing that funding to the walkway over the river. And at this stage, it's all been about funding. So I think it'd be worth us bringing back a further report to council on that matter before we actually make that final determination. And that
determination should come from ourselves.
And it should definitely be likewise with the other items.
Okay. Yep.
Yes, I've had some talks to officers about this. The committee, the town committee, is quite concerned that the permitted discretionary uses are houses, house and auxiliary apartments, car park subdivision, so the house with discretion, they were asking how does it protect the area to keep it to its present usage of training facilities and horse training, etc., when it's in the discretion with permit to allow house an auxiliary apartment, car park and subdivision. So, I mean, it seems like it doesn't achieve the outcome. It also has this area in red on it, which is owned by the government, the state government, or its Crown land. I think it's leased to a stable at the moment. So that needs clarification, but I've already spoken. The other one I want to mention was the Capewee. I think there's been some advertising that government, that state or federal government, has got some money available for spraying Capewee or assisting the Capewee, that we could follow up on that. I think that's that could give us an opportunity. I think there could be grants and available.
There's a land care grant program around at the moment, but it's only for land care groups, it's not for councils. And it's only small, it's called the Small Grants Program, it's only for us.
Not available for councils, Jen, is it? Okay.
There's also, is that the NRM grants?
Yeah.
Yes. Council Paul is next.
Oh, yeah. Well, unfortunately, there used to be weed inspectors, and they've all in recent, over the last 20 years, have all been taken away. And so you have this problem, and the other thing that's becoming even more pronounced is ragwort, and particularly the wet, sort of hot season, the wet, hot, wet, hot that we're having at the moment, it's becoming a problem too. So pretty much going to get out of control.
And just also, I want to take a bit, I mentioned earlier about the state of the new Perth bypass. It's just totally covered with cakeweed, and I think we should contact state both and ask them to address that for us. And I think also we need to contact state growth and let them know that when they're doing a development such as a new highway, that they disturb the soil, and it's going to promote the growth of weeds. So they need that should be on the agenda. They should be doing a weed program as an ongoing part of their stuff they're doing. They just can't do it and turn it over, and so they should be at least maintaining the weeds for, you know, 1 year. I don't think council's taken over the road yet. So I mean, it's still their responsibility, but they build roads, they should be aware that they create weed issues when they do that, and they should be responsible for their problems they cause.
I think this whole matter raises the question that we had. We put as a recommendation, I think you may have supported it, for a weed officer.
Yes,
and you know, we're talking, we just go round and round and round in circles. So, you know, I still argue the same point. We need as a municipality a weed officer.
Absolutely.
Do you want the
Councillor Lambert?
Great, right,
Well, I mean, it should be in our council budget. I mean, we should. Yeah, we can't. It's just going to go around in circles. Well, we've got north going on the southern end of this town. North going on the side of the road.
Councillor Lambert. And gorse growing along the new patch where the Perth new highway is. So if you're on the Haggerston Road looking up, all you can see is gorse, rubbish and debris, and I think as well as weeds, state growths need to be cleaning up their act a little bit when it comes to maintenance of their patch. And it's an absolute disgrace. There's rubbish everywhere, all over those things, and weeds and gorse. So I mean, it's like they've just created a road. What a great road! Move on to the next bit, and they've just no accountability whatsoever. And I think it's about time that they did. I mean, we're taxpayers as well as councillors and ratepayers, and I think we deserve a little bit better in our municipality than what they've served up. It's a beautiful road, but the rest of it, honestly, their maintenance leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, if we had a weeds officer, what powers would we have to force landowners to actually act upon the weeds? I think it's a good idea. It may be something you could float with the neighbouring council of Meander, which is a huge rural district as we are, and you could.
Mayor, but we've gone from a Montford district committee thing on a levy bank to. Appointing our weeds officer, can we have this for another meeting, please? Just not get the loss.
I'm not going to be bullied by the councillor. I'm following through and supporting a very, very knowledgeable person who actually works in the rural community. He has a knowledge, but I mean, it is something you could share the cost with the neighbouring municipality, with Meander Valley. It's something, but you need also to have the regulations of how to enforce, because it's the landowners that are the most contributing to, particularly Radwell and particularly to Cape.
That's true, it's all right our footpath sometimes. Yeah. Okay, next, I've got to put that recommendation.
I think a slight amendment to that resolution would be that report removed to the Romford District Committee and actually back to council in the first instance.
Yes.
And that would discuss the.
Yes, move and second to have Okay, put that recommendation. All those in favour? Against? Carried. The date of the next council meeting will be the 16th of November. Information items? Councillor Pinnan?
Is there an item completed there where Haggerston Road was named Haggerston Road, yet some ratepayers have rang up about some rubbish along that road? The council staff here have not shown on their maps, and worse still, it's gone, and just as late as today, a person's rang up from Devon Hills to State Growth, and they've gone looking for their maps, and they can't find it either. So I don't know what the process is. Is the process parked through and the name hasn't been official, or is it official and everyone should know about it?
Yeah, it's official.
So everyone should know about it.
Everybody should know about it. The list should know about it.
So is it possible just to send someone a reminder here in State Road that the maps need changing?
Please. I think our maps haven't been upgraded around here for a long time.
You don't have to do studies on this anyway.
Minor suburb, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Councillor
Pellet. Item 313/19. Is there any update on that? That's the renaming the Macquarie River report.
An application's been prepared on that. We're waiting for, I believe at this stage, and I'll check, we're waiting for a letter of support from the Aboriginal Council with regard to that. Through the process, I think there was just a request, but nothing in writing that we're aware of. So we've written back to seek a letter of support, and the application will be lodged. There's actually an application being completed.
Councillor Brooks.
Any update on the Wellington Street, Marlborough Street intersection on Sticky Beaks Corner? Because I know we did conduct a traffic movement survey. Have we had any results on that, or what's come out of it? Because that was a good while ago.
Correct. But, we're still waiting on a report back from engineer. I will follow up tomorrow. It should have been directed to us by now. I know we did speak to the chairman over the property up there. He actually went and done a bit of talking to them. and a few others in the area. Now that's actually back in Wheatbury, not this far.
Was that just as simple as counting the vehicle movements, or was there other things involved with that?
Oh, look at their vehicle movements, the truck moving through the area as well, and what turns left and right. Which, to be honest, at the end of the day, it was only visual things. The count only gives you vehicle movements.
Yeah.
So you talk about the hard surface stuff.
We waited for a report back from Safe Road, didn't we, on that?
This one was for James G. Okay. Oh, we engaged a truck engineer.
We got getting our own report done. Mm.
Okay, do I have anyone move and second that the information items be received? Councillor Lindsay, Councillor Gideon, all those in favour? Against? Carried. Gov 7, an ordinance for the Association Service Agreement.
Yes, Madam Mayor, it is as presented, a very short report. Obviously, in the attachments is actually the agreement. It details the reporting requirements, the actual financial support, and the annual payments. And the final implications are identified there in the report. It's nearly $2,000 a year support for the association. I believe particularly what council's seen in the last 12 months or so has been quite the finance has been well used with regards to what the board's been producing over that time, particularly, and also prior to that. And they also have the additional funding for the COVID-19, what they implemented there with regards to supporting local businesses. And there's a further report where they're seeking the additional $7,000. And they've met the reporting requirements for that too, but that's a separate report altogether.
Councillor Foley.
I move the matter to be discussed.
Seconded. Councillor Boss, all those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried.
I move the recommendation be accepted.
Seconded. Councillor Adams. I'd just like to add that several of us that attended their annual general meeting, more than like 90 people there, very good evening, very good presentations, the whole thing was very professional, and yeah, I'd just like to personally congratulate them, but I think as a council, they could be congratulated on the great work they're doing. Okay, I'll put that recommendation. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried.
Yes, Councillor Gideon, the Northern Business Association pandemic support package. Yes, Madam Mayor, the report is as presented there, and again, there's further information in the attachments. The summary of the progress is also identified within the content of the actual report here. It's just recommended that the additional $7,000 be provided.
On Gap 9? No,
Gap 8.
Sorry.
Recommendation that council continues to fund.
Yes. Councillor seconding. Any further discussion? No. I'll put that recommendation. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried.
Move that the matter be discussed.
Councillor Calvert seconding. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Councillor Foley.
I'd like to move the recommendation that we provide the $30,000 over the recommended 3 years. I think that.
We have seconded before.
Yep. We're entering into, unfortunately, one of the greatest recessions we've had since the Great Depression. Where these neighbourhood houses work right across the state, they bring enormous benefit, enormous additional money and involvement of the community in helping themselves as well. Also, this area has always lacked services that are provided at Campbelltown and many other areas through the hospital and so on. We do have a community facility here, but very few services, like Westbury has and other places. And every time I pursued this over many years, and I know a federal colleague pursued it for years and years and years, to try and get more welfare services into Longford, we always hit brick walls, regardless of what the brand of government has been, because they argue from the public servants, oh, you're too close to Launceston. Well, we have problems here in this town, also at Cressy and other areas, where the school, in fact, if you talk to many of the teachers at Cressy, they've had to assist in many of these areas, as we find here at Longford. And I just think it'll bring enormous benefits to have a community house and to get this established. And if we can attract funds through various, through the state government, also other funding which has been identified, we've got to start from somewhere. So I would commend that we support this, as we did at last council meeting, in ensuring that we had Rotary set up their facility.
Thank you, Mayor. I absolutely support everything that Councillor Polly has said. I think it's way beyond time that this happened. I feel like we're the only municipality that doesn't have an aged house situation. And I've been to quite a few in the Lions area, and they provide a variety of services. They are the heart and soul of some of the communities. If I could just suggest one thing, so that we start on the right foot as in terms of the fact that this is a very inclusive of all people in the Northern Midlands, that we don't refer to it as the Longford Community House Project, that we refer to it as the Northern Midlands Community House Project. And I think that then will enable everyone to feel that they belong to it and that they can access it, and that it's not just a Longford project, that it's for everyone in our communities. Because it's not practical to have a neighbourhood house in every one of our small communities, as much as we'd like to. So I just think by naming it the Northern Midlands Community House Project, that would give that inclusivity for everyone to feel that they belong to it and that they can access it. I hope that gets...
So the movement is going to happen in that... Yes.
I'm happy with it, yeah.
Councillor Adams.
Thank you. All right?
Yep.
There was only one thing in the report that talked about possibility based at Riverlands Centre. Nothing against Riverlands personally, but under the website, what Neighbourhood House is, locally based community asset, run by volunteers, not-for-profit, legally incorporated association, non-partisan, not aligned with any political party, secular, not aligned to any religion. So I think you've got to be careful in that sense. So I just put that, support all the comments that have been said. Those of us that have seen the programs solving problems, major issues sometimes within communities, a lot of voluntary work. And I think we have suffered from saying, well, you're close to the law system, blah, 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 which I think has just got to be rejected.
Look, in principle, I don't have a problem with this, but I'm going to make the same comment that I keep making about all these unbudgeted, planned, no business case projects that come to us. There's got to be a process that these things go through to make sure that their business cases are robust and we're getting the best bang for our buck. These things that come up every week, every council meeting, that are not planned for, that are not in the budget, that don't have the appropriate paperwork, are just unacceptable to me.
Yeah, I'd like to just concur with what Councillor Adams was saying about having it at Riverlands. I don't agree that it should be at Riverlands. I think it should be within close proximity of the Helping Hand and the Longford Second Hand Op Shop, because I feel they're all tied together in a way. And some of those people that will be at the Helping Hand will be probably helping out at the community house or doing different things. So if we can try and find a location within walking distance with those sort of three, I think it would work a lot better when we were actually looking for a site for this. It's good that Riverlands were interested, but I feel that it's too far away and it's out on a back street that would probably be forgotten about. So I'd just like everyone to be mindful when we are looking for a location that we do sort of bear that in mind. I believe they're all sort of tied into one.
Absolutely. Councillor Calvert.
I just wonder whether the mover and seconder would be agreeable to, I mean, I support everything that's put forth, but I just wonder whether we shouldn't apply for funding for this, make it conditional upon getting funding. Because I think it's something that would stand a really strong case of getting.
Well, I would assume that when it's only $10,000 a year and you're talking about a lot of money, that it would be depending upon us getting and attracting other money from the TAS Community Fund or government and so on. So I think all this does is an indication that we support the principle of $10,000 a year. There'd be no commitment of that money until we actually get money to couple with it. So I think, yeah, I would accept that as the fact that this would proceed upon receiving other money to assist, and obviously we'll need that because you're talking about, and also there is state government funding given out. We've been missing out on tens and tens of thousands of dollars, and also all these other community, they actually attract federal funding, they help other people apply for funding and so on. I also agree with the comment made that it should not be aligned with any particular political or church group. I think it's got to be separated from that, even though the generous offer from Riverlands is much appreciated, but you've got to have it central and you've got to have it non-aligned with any particular group. That's, yeah.
So you'd like to change your recommendation? This covers it.
Yeah. I just assume we can just put in there that this seeding fund, call it seeding funding, but just change it to seeding funding.
Yeah, David Mayor, we require the funding allocation because council's main expression of interest for this project through the community fund. We now can go to stage two. Before we can go to stage two, we need to ensure there's a financial commitment from council. So the project will not proceed unless we get external funding.
Yeah. Leave it as is.
Yeah, we accept that.
Councillor Goss.
Just a question for Ms. Whitfield. The money doesn't say where the money's allocated from. Have we got the money to put towards this, sir?
This will be an item that will have to come up in the mid-year budget review. But at this stage, it's just a commitment for the grant application. So.
Okay, I'll put that recommendation. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
Me.
Councillor Davis? No one else? Motion's carried. I'll ask the Deputy Mayor to sit up here in the top places.
We'd ask Ms. Ed to thank our team for us. And this is the first place of climate emergency, yes. Climate change. We have got a recommendation, which is on page 35.
Councillor Gillingham. I'm sorry, you should be running it, sorry. I'll move to discuss.
I was going to move the recommendation, but I wanted some assistance with modifying the recommendation. So, number two of the recommendation, it's got the Prepare a Climate Change Emergency Strategy and Action Plan, inclusive of an audit initiative taken by council for the last 5 years and just additional opportunities for improvement. So we're going back 5 years. 5 years, I would have thought we'd be looking more forward than backward. I understand backwards will give you history, but can I have a little bit of thought on that recommendation in time?
I think it was clearly to identify what, I think to show the community we actually have been doing a number of projects within this area that we're considering, to identify those and then also assess the way where they've taken us to, and if there's additional opportunities to improve what we've actually done in the last 5 years. We don't need to go that far back, that's obviously can be at council's discretion, but it's really just look at what we've done, see what the opportunities are, and then perhaps through the audit identify what additional opportunities outside the ones we've done today.
So that's just that. This third point was looking at the allocation. I just wondered whether we appoint an auditor mid-term at the December-January period that then can take effect in the new budget period, and I didn't know whether that was an issue to do that or not.
We can bring a report back to council, identify the cost. We just thought here through this process back-end work and then present a report.
So if that could be modified, that part of the motion. And lastly, there's been a lot of correspondence from the LGAT and the Prime Minister and the Premier. Who do we write to again, or do we reiterate to that bunch, or have they received 78 letters from every council in Australia? I was going to include something in the motion about writing to the Prime Minister, but when I read through the documentation, it looks like they've been hounded to death over this. So do I still leave that in there, or do you find it difficult to write to LGAT, etc.?
No, that would be a problem to write.
Yes. Well, I'm including in that motion 4 point that we write to the Prime Minister, the Premier and the LGAT.
I'll second the motion.
Sorry, can I ask what was
the additional information that you wanted?
Number four, that we write to the Prime Minister.
No, before that, to number two.
Number three was that the budget allocation, that we look at the strategy and audit in mid-term budget, and probably look at allocating something at that stage, for an audit to be done, so that in the new financial period, we can budget for what is required to be done, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So including a half-yearly budget review.
An audit, and then it's ready to go in the new financial year of the initiatives that we're going to put in place.
Thanks, Councillor.
Councillor Knowles. I've got a few words to say. Currently, I realise a lot of you have heard all this information before, but currently worldwide we're seeing record rains, floods, more extreme fire events, record temperatures where 40 plus and 50 plus are becoming normal. Sea level is rising. Climate events are being described as apocalyptic, unprecedented. Poorer nations, unfortunately, are affected four times higher than developed nations. The Solomon Islands, where I've actually got family, they've had to pull up a whole row of houses that are closer to the sea, and cut down jungle so they can put houses above those houses on very tiny islands because the level of sea is rising. It's risen a whole house height, and that's quite serious for small communities. The Siberian forest, the lungs of the world, they call them, one-fifth of the world's forest, they're on fire at the moment. They're releasing carbon dioxide in amounts never seen before. Underground fire is burning the permafrost, releasing more CO2, and it's affecting everybody. The ground's thawing and the land is going underwater. The Amazon forest is being cleared at an alarming rate, sending thousands of kilometres of smoke, thousands of kilometres across the region, all the way to their Sao Paulo, the largest city. The forest doesn't burn naturally. Fires are a direct result of human activity, where it's being deliberately ignited to clear the forest for farming and cattle ranching. Brazil is the largest exporter of beef in the world, and 80% of the soy it grows for the animal feed is in that forest. Deforestation increased 30% between 2018 and 19, and that amounted to an area of 9,762 square kilometres. Losing swathes of forest, rainforest, threatens regional rainfall patterns, the global climate, and some of the most unique forms of life on the planet. Canadian glaciers are collapsing. Replenishing is not keeping up with the ice melt each year. The terrain is unstable and trees are falling over. The majestic snowy peaks are being lost, and they predict within 50 years they'll be gone. In Florida, they're battening down for their sixth hurricane this year. Now, in the southern parts of the USA, it'll be the 10th hurricane this year in one single season. Japan is preparing for a serious, well, last week they were preparing for a serious typhoon. The frozen lochs in Scotland are no longer. It's not that many years ago, skating on frozen lochs was a serious sport. The ice cap in the Arctic is melting. The Arctic is predicted to be free of ice in summer within two decades. Around the world, more extreme events are occurring more often, with devastation beyond compare. We're seeing bushfires react in extreme ways and becoming more difficult to control, and each year it's getting worse, even in locations where bushfire mitigation measures are in place and fuel loads and vegetation are being reduced. Another 5 or 10 years, it's predicted that there'll be nothing we can do to have any effect to stop this change. Students around the world are attending climate classrooms, and they're taking it seriously, but it's our generation that's actually not been listening and really not doing anything that's making a difference. Australia is a developed country, but we are most at risk from climate change. National disasters and extreme weather events have doubled in the last 20 years, mostly due to climate change. 2019 was the hottest and driest year on record. After 3 years of drought, oppressive heat wave, no water in dams and not enough water in storage. In 2019 in New South Wales, after the years of profound drought, there were 5,000 fires before summer started, more than double the area that was burnt in a normal fire season. On one day in November, there were 100 fires burning, 17 were at emergency level. New South Wales and Queensland were in a state of emergency. The incident control rooms have to decide where to send the resources, but people are saying, what are you doing? You're not looking after my place. 600 homes were lost by the end of November. Australia had the worst air quality in the world. Millions of animals and native animals died in last summer's bushfires, and hundreds are pushed closer to extinction or critically endangered. One-fifth of Australian forests were lost in last year's unprecedented summer. That's 8.5 million hectares burnt, and that included rainforests and subtropical rainforests, areas that don't normally burn. The science is coming together, and it will be normal for weather events to be extreme, and the worst is to come. Most of the coral reef, the Australian coral reef, will be dead within 30 years if it's business as usual that continues. We've already lost more than half of its coral since 1995 due to warmer seas. The catastrophic power of severe weather should never be underestimated. Climate change is happening now. There is an increase in average temperatures and an increase in the intensity and unpredictability. The impacts have the potential to devastate people's lives, livelihoods, and even their properties, livelihoods, and even their lives. And that's how ecological effects ripple through communities. Plus, air emissions from fossil fuels cause thousands of deaths each year through lung and heart conditions. If it doesn't personally exist, it's often easier to pay less attention, or even think that climate change doesn't exist. We may think we're immune to it in Tasmania, but the reality is, in the past 30 years, we have seen significantly less snow, despite this year's recent extreme event. There is significant dying of the brown top stringy bark at higher altitudes, the Tasmanian oak. It's Eucalyptus obliqua, is the right name of it. It's generally classed as being as tough as boots and actually gave us the word eucalyptus. But you just need to drive up the hill to Rossarden to see the dead trees everywhere. Not so much down in the valley, but up the hills there they certainly are. We need to change the rules of the game. There is strong feeling that climate change is not being addressed by government in a collaborative and effective manner. Responsible economic behaviour and land stewardship can create collaborative opportunities between councils and just individually. And it's not just about climate change versus jobs and the economy. Renewables create jobs, enhancing the economy. Tasmanian power is created by renewable energy, and we are progressing towards the Mariner's Link to sell this to the mainland in the long term to our advantage. Our ability to grow more diverse crops in our slightly warmer climate will also be to our advantage. But the financial impacts of predicted more often severe weather events are likely to hurt our current tight budgets. It's time for us to stop ignoring this very real situation and be a part of the solution. The Northern Midlands Council is already implementing practical solutions, but we need to continue to do more. But now it's time to name it up for what it is and lobby the state and federal governments to do the same. Declare a climate emergency and actively promote how residents can work with us to make a difference. Our school children and their children deserve better, and we need to show leadership on environmental and sustainability issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Miles, for those words. And we need to
I've put down that piece of paper. If you look at this circle at the bottom, the large circle is the land that was burnt. Now, this was produced in January this year. By the Financial Review, and that was the area burnt in Australia. The next circle was the area burnt in the Amazon, and the tiny circle was the area burnt in California. And yeah, it just exacerbated. Well,
Councillor Adams.
Councillor Brooks might like to go.
Councillor Adams, you're
That's fine. I certainly support the motion, and the work that I've done in this area was that the, a lot of evidence from CSIRO and others that the increase in rainfall will come harder and faster, not so much changing in Tasmania, than the amount of water we get for vegetation, but also frost, the changing of frost, which will affect propagation in our rural sector. But the water coming down in bigger storm will affect local government, our stormwater, our infrastructure that's in place. And I think we should take advantage of this motion for dealing when we write to the Prime Minister and the Premier and anyone else, is that we'll need to, when we look at 100-year floods, which we do now in our planning scheme, plus climate change, we've got some effects in that. The levee bank for here, we've got the levee bank for Longford will be increasing, and we'll need to see funding for that in the future. We've got two pretty flat towns in Longford and Perth. Perth doesn't suffer from flooding from the river, from the southeast, but we certainly can do here because of the nature, and we get all that water comes down the southeast and meets at Longford and flows past it down into the gorge. So a lot of opportunity that we need to document, I think, with this motion of how climate change is affecting and how we will be impacted for the future. So certainly support the Mayor and Councillor Ginninham's motion.
Councillor Brooks.
It's okay to declare a climate change emergency, but what are the initiatives the council have been actively involved with before now, or are we just going to start from now? What give us some examples of what we've done over the last 5 years.
Well, for example, we've actually got the solar energy that's been ongoing for quite a while. We've actually got them on this building and a number of other buildings. We've supported a number of our community bodies as well, which have done that as well with regards to solar. Council expect, it's about 3 or 4 years ago, I think, of course, the service manager will correct me here, but I think it's about $700,000 we spent with regards to our streetlight, changing that all over to LEDs. That was quite a significant expense that council supported a number of years ago. We've also been looking at developing our stormwater management plan. They're going to identify, I think, as Councillor Adams suggested, they identify the issues that we need to build in regards to our towns. Council has been actually taking forward steps with regards to West Perth, purchasing land over there and actually taking notice that there is issues over there with regards to ensuring that there is that area, particularly a number of houses not flooded through there, through the 1 in 100. We've obviously supported state growth with regards to when they built the highway there. They've actually ensured that highway was built to another standard to ensure that any break in that dam further up, which is very unlikely, that highway could sustain that, and it's also restricted the water flow into West Perth. But these are the sort of things that we've been working on, and there have been numerous other issues too. And that's where it's suggested back in the report that we need to go back and do that audit and identify what we've done in the past and what we're doing in the future with regards to the water sense of urban design that we're looking at for our streetscapes as well. The planting of trees down the main street, down Smith Street, and what's happening down our main street. The push by council, particularly around Perth, to plant to work for state growth, that tree corridor. We've planted about 4,000 trees. There's going to be another 4,000 trees there. There needs to be an ongoing program with regards to planting trees throughout our area and throughout the world, really. So it's just to identify what we've done and what the additional opportunities are.
But that flood levy that we've got here that protects the town for a 100-year flood, that won't protect the town in a couple of decades, though, will it? If we're saying that it's going to be climate change, so that flood levy in theory won't be high enough.
Well,
we haven't really addressed that issue to start looking at what's going to happen in another 20 years' time. Yeah. And I think that's quite an important issue for the town of Longford. We can all sit around here and say we can declare a climate change emergency, but we're still sitting on our hands, I believe.
Well, sorry, that's what the idea of the audit about and developing the plan and the action plan is to actually identify those opportunities and actually do those full investigations to actually see what needs to be done with regards to what the possibilities about the extra height of the river out here and the possibility of the failure of the actual levies if that includes climate change.
TIP is another one that I think council has been working on.
Councillor Pollock.
Yeah, look, I support the resolution. I think that's why we've got to be very conscious of extending any more subdivision in flood-prone areas in Longford, because it will mean extending the levy. And if we're going to have to extend the levy, it's going to, how are we going to do top up the one we've got if we're going to extend further? And as you know, there is things before us now which refers to low-lying land that is in a flood-prone area, and that we have before us an issue where we're going to have to lift the level of the actual land, I believe, to enable the subdivisions to go ahead in that area. So we've got to be conscious of that and act accordingly. The other thing is that on the coast of Eastern Australia, already almost every night you turn the television on, you're finding huge erosion where multi-million dollar houses are slipping into the sea, and it's coming back on the government, local government, and complaints, and insurance companies are not very happy about it. If you go down to the southern part, and I used to have a property, a humble one of course, in the Sandy Bay area, and there is already warnings in relation to Nutgrove Beach and that low-lying area of Sandy Bay and other parts of Hobart that is under threat within a reasonable time of being inundated by water. And if you talk to the Hobart City Council, I'm sure they will verify that. So it's immediate, and it is occurring. So I just support the resolution.
Thank you, Councillor Polly. Councillor, you want to sum up, please?
Look, I think we've got to be careful. I agree with the Amazon and other areas, but I think we as councillors and council, we should be looking at our own backyard. And I think with the audit that we're talking about, that will cover those things. I think sometimes just got to be a little bit careful what we're putting forward. The solar panels, for example, what I've read on them, actually are built in poor countries. They pollute the atmosphere over there. Horrendous work conditions they work under to produce those solar panels, yet we've got a perfectly good pollution-free power supply in Tasmania. Not the case in other states, but certainly in Tasmania, so something to be careful of. We need to look at the way we identify hazards from a burn aspect. We look at them in January when it's all too late to do things, and then if they catch light, and create bushfires. So I think we need to bring that program forward a lot and be onto them before the bushfire season starts. I think we need to look at the planning scheme where we're allowing houses to be built in the bush with very poor access, and we've seen in Kinglake in Victoria, which was just an absolute nightmare to get into and get out of. And little wonder, it was just a fire waiting or fire disaster waiting to happen. And we've got similar sort of things like that in Tasmania, and so we're in Northern Midlands, and we've got to be very careful where we let people build and how they build in those areas. And likewise with the flood-prone things, so I think that looking at 100, 1 in 100 flood, I think that should be lifted, and the order will bring it out, but probably to 1 in 200. I think there's areas in Longford and Perth. We need to be very careful what we do. Councillor Polly is correct. We've seen a lot of parts of Australia where damage has been caused because local councils have allowed those properties to go there. There's a few happening in Tasmania that have been hushed up, but they've happened here in Tasmania. And just like the ones in New South Wales, damage to properties, councils approved them, and the landowner is difficult to go back to an insurance company, and they find it easy to sue the local council. So those sort of things can happen. So I think that an audit to look at what council's doing, what they're purchasing, why aren't we purchasing electric cars, etc., and those sort of things will be a great audit to do and have an initiative there for us to take on without what should be worried about other parts of the world. But we can do something here in Northern Midlands ourselves instead of looking at everyone else. I think the opportunity also is quite huge on the circular recycling program that we listened to the other week by NCD, whatever they call themselves now, and the opportunity for us to get 100,000 matched up with 100,000. I think we could do some fantastic initiatives at our refuse site at at Longford that could be leading edge in Australia. We could start it and we could show other councils in this state and Australia how we can do something with recycling. So with that and those modifications on that recommendation, I think that that is the start for Northern Midlands Council.
Thank you, Councillor O'Connor. Adding more conversation, we'll put the motion. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
Aye.
Only Councillor Brookson against, all other councillors are for. The motion's carried.
Thank you. Okay, the next one is CND1, the monthly report to Development Services.
Move, we be discussed.
I'll second that.
All those in favour? Aye. Against? Carried.
Move that report be noted.
Councillor Calvert, any discussion? No, I'll put that recommendation. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Okay, the next one is the fence off leash area, dog exercise area in the discuss.
Second.
Councillor all those in favour? Against? Carried. Councillor
thank you, Mayor. There has been a lot of controversy about the dog park at Perth, and I'm really pleased to see this has finally got on the agenda for some serious consideration. I think there's been some really good suggestions put forward here. I've walked through with several residents who have approached me about this with various suggestions and things that they would like to see. And I note that there is a particular part of the fence that continues to be cut and pulled up. So it looks like there's a well-worn track through there where a dog or has been let go through rather than picked up, but onto the railway line, which for us is a prohibited area anyway. We shouldn't be on that area at all. It's too dangerous. So I think what's proposed here will help stop that. I'm very much in favour of the they call the fencing to go along that whole strip there. And when I showed this to a couple of residents, they were very, very pleased with the proposals put forward. I do want to commend the two people that wrote to council, and they have been talking about this for quite some time, and they're like the voices of the community, so I commend them for bringing these ideas to council, and I believe that most, if not all, of their proposal has been incorporated into this, and I support everything that they've put forward. And I think it's about time that we secure this area. It's a really well-used dog area. I know I've got a lady who won't take her dog there anymore, and because they don't believe it's a safe place for the dogs to run around now, particularly because they're an older lady. She can't always get to that fence line before the dogs do to see if it's actually been snipped and pulled back up again. So so she's quite supportive of this. I think we need to make sure we do it properly, though. I just have a question about whereabouts is the wallaby fencing going, and how far will the security fence go along, and is that going to go all the way along that rail line area to make sure that you don't just do one part, someone will just come along and start snipping something else. So can I get some the
officer to maybe answer? Yeah, so the wallaby wire fence is going to go for the whole way, which is just a farm fence. That's what the price. And the other fence, the black one, the wrought iron one near the railway, that's 175 a metre. So that fence is 60,000 to complete that section.
Okay.
And also there's a paling one there, which is $100 a metre, which is 35,000. Will that offer pay with them? Will we fix that hole you were talking about just then?
Yes.
Last week, and pulled up. What it is the first and final day of the fence have been told the dog walks underneath it.
Yes, yes, I've been told the same thing.
So have repaired that plenty of time, and it just keeps happening.
Yeah. So, look, I mean, I'm still in favour of the security fencing for maybe the majority of that area, if it's at all possible, but I am conscious of the fact that there's a budget. Is there one... If we just have a go on that
that section where a peg's been lifted up, could we then do paving to the rest, or that would be out of character, or how would that look? Because I think it's easy, it would be, it would be still easy to sneak the fence. But part of the fence would be a little bit more difficult to get through and to break, so.
I suppose it all comes down to budget. The section, if you went halfway with the black wrought iron one there, which is, if everyone knows what the bypass there, you look down on top of it, same as that. It's just a budget thing, you're halfway, you're still with $30,000 that, you've still got the other half to do. $7,500, so you slot around $50,000.
Look, at the end of the day, this is a really well-used piece of infrastructure in Perth, and the Perth community's been screaming out for something like this, or if this can't be repaired, I think it would probably cost more than what we're looking at today to actually replicate it somewhere else. I don't think we've actually got a plot of land identified, have we, for any other dog population area. So I think we need to make sure that this one is as best as we can possibly do to make sure as best as we possibly can that people stop breaking the fence, particularly going over into the railway line. It's really dangerous. I support putting as much of that security fence in as the budget will allow. Councillor Cabot.
The wallaby fence to me, one has a pair of wires, and right. Cut it just to protect the same. Electricity fix it. Electric wire and green sheet. I think there's really no alternative to put the black fence, the security fence, because they'll cover it again. Unless you put a gate in, and then you're putting a gate over an illegal thing. The black fence for me.
The wrought iron fence, though, that's only directly adjacent to the railway line, is that correct?
Yes, yeah, for 350 metres.
And that's the 350 metre length there, so that's about $60,000 on top.
Councillor Bennett's next.
We're paying $60,000 because someone is cutting a wire fence. I mean, you've really got to ask questions. What would surveillance? Can we put cameras there for a period of time to see who's cutting the fence?
Maybe that's a good idea.
A few views, but I just think it's horrendous that we're spending $60,000 because someone's cutting the fence too lazy to walk around it or whatever it may be. And I don't think that 1 minute we should be doing that sort of situation. Whether you put the wallaby fence there and then back it up with a wire netting fence, which would make a lot harder to snip maybe, but with surveillance there as well. Is all of you going to
the camera?
I totally agree with Ian. I reckon we've got these mobile security cameras. I'm just worried that if we put up a $60,000 fence or whatever that cost is, that this individual will get a grinder and cut a hole through that as well. So you've got cordless grinders and that today. It's quite easy to do. If he's been cutting these fences for this long and it's an ongoing problem, I think the actual security of it needs to be addressed more so than to replace the fence.
Councillor Adams.
Yeah, I'd like to see something like this, and I hope it gets well reported that we might consider putting cameras there to nail this individual. It's somebody that thinks that they have to do whatever they want to do, and I think we should make sure the police are well aware. Maybe they can put a patrol or two down there as well, because somebody's doing it, and I guess they live in North Perth, north of the railway. Starts to narrow down who it might be. But if that gets reported, we bring it to the police. Trying to solve it by spending more of our money, I don't think it's going to do it. So I hope it gets reported that we will put a camera up there.
Councillor Dawson.
Just a couple of questions. Does the dog park have to be 350 metres long? Could it make it a bit shorter than that? 300 metres seems still quite a big dog park area, or 150 metres. The one at Longford, it wouldn't be any more than probably about 175 metres long, I would say, something like that. Does that have to be the whole 350 metres long? city, we can't get a resolution with why the fence wasn't cut. I mean, if someone's living in the area, maybe we have to a bit more resourceful in providing it, and put a gate back in further off on their land, and so they can walk out there through the gate, and then have a wire fence, so that it's their choice if they go out the wire. Yeah, but something like that. I just think there should be some way we should be able to resolve it, because obviously, by the sound of it, somebody in the community over there that doesn't want the access to it as it is, and doesn't want what we do, they keep on holding our equipment. So we need to address that facility and actually resolve that thing there first, and maybe making the park a little bit area. And I did think about the people with the older people, older ladies, maybe we need a couple of different sizes. A smaller area for more security, and then a bigger open area for people who don't need security. Yeah. So that people that like this council land that spoke about will feel a bit intimidated going to the big wide area, because they can get out, they don't have to be scut. If there was an area that's secure for those people, it might be better.
Councillor
Polly Smith. Yeah, look, I think Councillor Kinnunen's idea is right, that cameras. I won't vote to spend $60,000 putting a fence in that could be. Obviously, somebody's willfully doing this. They're doing this, I think, whatever fence you've got, a paling fence, whatever, somebody consistently cutting a hole in the fence is either they don't like dogs, they don't want the park there, or they've just been a nuisance. So I think the cheapest option, which we're using, I understand, in Patina Road, along where people have been dumping rubbish and so on. So I think to use the option of cameras. And let's see what we can catch, because at the end of the day, if you put this expensive fence up and they cut a hole in it, you've wasted $60,000.
Councillor Lambert's next.
I think the idea of the camera is a very good idea, and it is something that I think I've discussed with Councillor Davis at some point as well, and we were discussing with some options. However, that might capture them, but it doesn't solve the problem in the short term of the fences not being adequate for a dog run. I think, yes, maybe we should try that, but I think we also need to rewire the fence
at the same time, not just leave it as it is,
because if you've actually walked there and had a look, it's in a shocking state.
Yeah, it's rewired.
The fence is absolutely
in a very
wide fence.
Haven't finished. Thanks, everybody. So I think we need to make sure that we do our due diligence, do the maintenance on the fence. The double entrance, absolutely, we should be supporting the picnic tables and the chairs, the large bowl for the dogs to drink out of. I mean, that's just a no-brainer. We need to look after our animals. And then I suppose along with that comes the water meter. We can't get around that. But I would absolutely support putting a camera in there to monitor. And make it very public that that's the case, because my understanding is what is happening is they are snipping the fence to allow their dog to go through, so they they're going over themselves, but they're letting the dog go through, and there's a well-worn little track where it's been happening obviously for quite some time. So I'll move that motion.
Yes. Is this upon the camera? Conditional with the camera?
Yes, absolutely, with camera.
Second.
Councillor Calvert, did you wish to say more?
No, it's all just going on.
We should say there is a footpath for people to walk towards north.
I'll put that recommendation.